door?
Yeah.
All right, well, we're in the book of Luke, if any of you remember that.
You want to open the door with the...
No, I think the window needs to get... Oh, it is. Hold on.
Alright.
Yeah, I tried finding them, but never
mind. Randy found it. Alright. Luke chapter 6. We were in verse 20 last week, dealing with blessed is the poor.
Sorry, I didn't catch chapter.
Luke chapter 6. Verse 20. We looked at that last week just in the sense of how that when the Babylonians took over Jerusalem, they gave the land to the poor. It was a time when the law was no more, and they gave it all over to the poor. And be a similar thing, he says, blessed are the poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Verse 21, blessed are ye that hunger now, for ye shall be filled. Blessed are ye that weep now, for ye shall laugh. And of course, later we're going to get into the story of Lazarus and the rich man. And just the idea that under the law of Moses, if you were a rich person, you had an obligation towards the poor. And that's what, even what Abraham says to the man. He said, you were filled with your good things. That's why you were here. Lazarus had nothing. You didn't do what the law said towards him. And it actually cost you your soul to have done that. Sure. But it's just that idea that blessed are you hunger. Now the Apostle Paul said this. He said, unto this present hour we both hunger and thirst and are naked and have no certain dwelling place. Now he's not talking around running butt naked, you know, like Hollywood or something like that. He's talking naked in the sense not sufficient clothing for what he's doing.
So underdressed?
Yeah, not having sufficient clothing.
Not a coat.
Okay. Yeah, in other words, it might be cold, but you don't have a coat like other people do. And, you know, you just don't have as much as other people do. You're naked. You just don't have that much.
Well, I'm more coming from the point, so I've heard the term church best, so you're expected to dress a little better for that certain point. So I ask you
that. Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily what naked meant there. Naked in the Bible just means being underdressed, not having sufficient, not having enough. Okay. Can you jiggle that handle in the women's bathroom there that runs and runs? Yeah. Next time you use it in there, Dale, do it. All right. So he said, blessed are ye for that hunger now, for ye shall be filled. Blessed are that weep now, for ye shall laugh. And you know, one of the things the Apostle Paul talked about, he said, weep with them that weep. You know, sometimes people say to me, I don't know what to say. You know, my brother-in-law is going through this. My sister's going through this. What do you weep with them?
That's right.
What's he going to do? What can you say to somebody that goes through some of the stuff they go? There's nothing you can say. Just sit there and cry with them. Probably the most comforting thing you can do.
That's right.
But the Lord says, weep with them that weep. But here it just says, blessed are you that weep now, because you'll laugh later. And, you know, the whole idea in the Christian life, and it's kind of hard when you're in America because you don't go through a lot of persecution other than your own family sometimes or whatever else. But I don't know how long it'll be that way. I don't know how many of you heard Pastor Tong give his testimony.
Oh, man.
You know, you've seen a Greyhound bus before and you had that luggage thing in there. Now imagine one of those places like that. It's 110 degrees outside and you hide in that luggage place. Okay. And, you know, drive over those roads and everything, and then have the police catch you and pull you out and put you in a room so small you can't sit down and keep you overnight there. And then they bring you out and they have a rod this size and they're beating you and beating you with it, then putting you back in that room and such. But he also had that same chief of police get saved.
That's
all.
Wow.
You know, so, you know, blessed are you that weep now, for you shall laugh. And the Lord has that comfort. And you remember that if the Lord puts you in a position where you find yourself weeping, the Lord intends to comfort you.
Now, on a technicality note, does it still go for the same effect if you're still in some sympathetic, sad-wise, but can't bring tears? Or is there any difference?
I don't know. It's interesting. I'm not sure.
A question for you.
Yep. Certainly don't want to fake tears.
No.
Yep. But if you're worried that you can't come up with tears, go to Miss Ruth Ann. She'll whip you with a broomstick.
I bet she would.
Yeah, she'll see if she can't come up. Hello there, Miss Sharon. We're in Luke chapter 6, and we're in verse 22. And of course, this is the famous Sermon on the Mount, okay? Blessed are ye when men shall hate you, and when they shall separate you from their company, and shall reproach you, and cast out your name as evil for the Son of Man's sake. So it's one of those things, he says it's a blessing. Peter, James, and John, when they were beaten, they went back and praised God that they had been found worthy to suffer for his sake. Okay? So it's one of those things that if that should happen to you, it's a blessing. Okay? And you know you take it as a blessing, and you know the Lord stored that up, and the Lord's watching out for you on that.
By the way you describe that, that almost sounds exactly what happened to Jesus. Probably it is exactly.
It is. It's certainly he himself suffered that. Okay? And people who follow him will often suffer it. Now, the Apostle Paul said this, yea, all those who live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. It will come. Now, it could be just persecution, I say, from your family. Okay? It could be from a local government official. Okay? Whatever else, but it's coming. If you live a life without any persecution, it's probably because you've compromised so much nobody would bother with you. You know?
Yes, sir.
The story I tell many times, the guy that told me one time, well, if somebody threatened to shoot me, I wouldn't deny Jesus. And I just laughed at him and said, why would the devil waste a bullet on you?
That's right.
Okay, you deny him for everything else. I mean, you know, why get dramatic with a bullet? You'll deny him when your friends are telling dirty jokes. You'll deny him, you know. You deny him all the time with everything else that goes on. Why waste a perfectly good bullet? Now it goes on and it says this, verse 23, rejoice ye in that day and leap for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven, for in like manner did their fathers unto the prophets. Now, somebody was telling me about reading a story of the English martyrs that died under Mary Tudor, they call her Bloody Mary, and a lot of them were scholars and such, but three of them got locked in a dungeon. They were getting ready, you know, to be brought out for trial. And they said this, when the dungeon door slammed down, now imagine the nastiest cellar you know, being thrown down in it, and that door locking over that. And they actually had joy flood their souls, and they were shouting for joy. And they were actually disappointed when the door opened again, because that feeling of joy left them. Then it goes on and it says, well, and this is important, verse 23 again, rejoice in that day and leap for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven, for in like manner did their fathers unto the prophets. And see, this is interesting, because you'll go around and visit churches today, and everybody talks about, oh, you know, of old, this is how people were treated. They don't understand. If they were living back then, they'd have done it. Mm-hmm. All right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the very idea that they've switched to these other Bibles, they've compromised on everything else, and they don't understand, that's the spirit behind the persecution.
That's right.
You know, there's a pastor, Ruth Ann, and I won't even mention what church right now, but Ruth Ann and I took a pastor from a local church, not a Baptist church, but he's a nice guy. His wife's a nice lady. And we took him out to Ace's Restaurant, remember a year or so ago, and we went out with him, and I just had known the guy, and I thought, you know, why not build a bridge of peace with this guy? And the thing is, he's like so many local pastors in this area. He's struggling, and they all think they have to have a praise band.
That's right.
Well, you know, in Allegheny County, if you get 20 praise bands, you've scraped pretty low in the barrel by the time you get to the 19th, you know? And so it's typical. You go in the church, and there's some woman in her 50s or whatever trying to look cool, playing a, you know, a soundboard, and some guy with a pot belly and bald who's trying to be the cool guitarist or whatever. They're trying to get everybody excited, and, you know, they're having trouble being excited. You know, just it's not very exciting. It's the same old songs everybody's heard and such. And, you know, but the guy's having trouble in his church. So I mentioned to him, we were talking about it, and I said, look, I said, if I played those songs, I couldn't build my church. It wouldn't work. And I said, in our church, we're singing the old hymns, but we have all young people. They're coming in, you know. They love it. Though their hands are raised, they can't wait to sing them and such. And I said, you know, it's a testimony against you. You think you're going to get young people with it, and all you have is people with pot bellies, you know? And, you know, he stiffened up, and we just never heard from him again.
That's right. That's how.
You know, and here, I didn't say that to criticize. I said, try to help the guy, you know? Look, why don't you try something a little contemporary? Try something that actually worked that young people like, but nope.
I have a quick question.
Yes, sir.
I'm probably going to sound like I'm shooting an arrow at you or whatnot, but could the beginning of that story be the core reason why you've taught us in the past during your sermons, don't look down or condemn another religion, minus the whole America bit?
Well, it's not really another religion. He claims to be a Christian. He's a pastor doing the same thing I am, and he's having trouble, and I gave him some advice how to help him. Not to criticize him and knock him down. All right? It's different than me going up and saying, you're a Muslim, you're going to hell. All right? There's a big difference. Do you see the difference?
In a sense, but I was kind of more looking for a yes, no answer.
No.
Okay.
All right. All right. I'm always reminded of the little girl, a little boy that came and asked his parents where babies come, or where did he come from? And they'd been waiting to have that talk, and so they went after supper and pulled out the books and went and had the whole talk. And said, oh, well, Bobby came from Chicago. All right.
Okay.
All right. All right, so it says in verse 23 again, rejoice ye in that day and leap for joy, for behold, your reward is great in heaven. For in the like manner did their fathers unto the prophets. And again, what Peter, James, and John said, we have been found worthy to suffer. God isn't going to trust everybody in that circumstance. And then he goes on, it says verse 24, but woe unto you that are rich, for ye have received your consolation. And again, this is one of the things that, you know, Abraham was rich. There's no doubt about that. David was rich. Solomon was rich. The question is, what are you really striving for? Okay? If you're just striving for riches, the Apostle Paul later said, woe to them that will to be rich. That's my will. What do you want in life? I want to be rich, okay? Because they receive to themselves the heartache and the sorrows. And the sad part is, most people, even poor in America, have those heartaches and sorrows because they will to be rich. Buying lottery tickets and schemes and all this idea, dreaming about being rich and such. And it's just that old idea, just get out there and work and be happy with what you do, and you're a very rich person. You know, if you have a job and you enjoy what you're doing, what richer person is there?
That's right.
You know?
Yes, sir.
If you have, you know, a task in life and you enjoy doing your task, is there a richer person on God's earth?
That's right.
And, you know, some of you ladies, if you've got some kids at home and a husband that puts food on the table and you've got that kind of stuff, you're a rich person. I mean, it's a, you know, you really have a wonderful life. And there's people all over that give anything for that. But it's that person saying to themselves, you know, I'm putting money first. That's what I'm going to get and such. And he said, you have your consolation. You have your riches. And it goes on, it says this, verse 25, woe unto you that are full, for ye shall hunger. Woe unto you that laugh now, for ye shall mourn and weep. And again, it's all priority. What is it that you really are looking for? You know, you're all lighthearted and laughing now when things are serious. Verse 26, woe unto you when all men shall speak well of you, for so they did their fathers to the false prophets. And it's just that idea that, you know, if you see a preacher and everybody thinks he's a wonderful preacher, chances are he's not a wonderful preacher, okay? And I'm not saying in, you know, small groups. I mean, if you think well of me, I'm going to give you special dispensation to do it. And, you know, you're allowed to do it. But it's just that idea. I was glad of what Tanya said the other day where they're talking in Genesis Church preacher said, well, there's only one church in Allegheny County that's growing and we don't know why, okay? And well, come on over and visit, buddy. See what goes on here.
Yeah, buddy.
All right?
Come on in.
Yeah.
Come on.
You don't really want to know, don't
they? No, they don't.
They don't.
They don't want to know. No.
They'd be calling you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. They for sure don't want to do what we're doing.
They don't know.
Yeah.
Simplicity.
27, but I say unto you which hear. Notice he said, I say unto you which hear. Not everybody can hear what he's saying. Okay? Love your enemies. Do good to them which hate you. Bless them that curse you. And pray for them which despitefully use you. Now, he's getting into this whole idea, and he's going to wrap it all up. So I'm going to read through this, and then we'll comment on it. Verse 29, and unto him that smiteth thee on the one cheek, offer the other. And him that taketh away the cloak, forbid not to take thy cloak also. Give to every man that asketh of thee, and of him that taketh away thy goods, ask them not again. And as ye would that men should do unto you, do ye also to them likewise. And then look at verse 32. Here's the reasoning. For if ye love them which love you, what thank have ye? For sinners also love those that love them. You know, and it's one of those things, to be a Christian is to love the unlovely. It's to love people that are hard to love. Mr. Randy?
Might I add a story to correlate with that?
You go right ahead.
From what I was told by my grandparents years ago, my Uncle Bob apparently encountered a bully. Tried starting a fight with him. Principal caught it early. Discussed it with both of them. And to my surprise, my uncle said to the kid, I'd rather have you as a friend than an enemy. Split second later, the guy turns to him and like, what? After which, pretty much became best buds.
Well, they are. All right. That's how Ruth Ann met me. All right.
Wow.
Yeah. She's getting ready to beat me up, and I said, I'd rather you married me, and she did. All right.
It's not corny as ever, I see.
Yeah. The idea comes again here, and it's just that simple idea. One of the things I've taught my kids, and all of them know this inside out, what's the secret to being liked? To like everybody you meet. Like them, okay? Why not? What does it hurt, okay? I met Cliff Taylor for breakfast this morning at Friendly's, and it's one of those things. I had a $20 budget. I took a $20 bill. I get there to Friendly's. Breakfasts are half price, okay? I still gave the whole 20. The waitress was stunned. It's my budget. What did it hurt? You know, what did it hurt to do that? Have her just stunned, you know, that somebody would leave all that extra money down there. And she came by a couple times thanking us again, you know, just surprised by that. What did that hurt? You know, I budgeted 20. What did it hurt to put that down there at all? But it's just that idea. Just go out there and like as many people as you can. Because if you think about it, the people who like you, don't you like them? Mm-hmm. You do. If you think of the school teachers in school who liked you, made it known they liked, don't you like that teacher? Isn't that so? You know, just all the relatives who like you, don't you really like that relative? Isn't it nice when they're around, the ones that really like you? Well, why not be that person? Why not just like people? And you say, well, they're unlikable. Well, like them anyway, okay? There's usually something about them that's fairly likable, and, you know, hone in on that and like that person. Most of the time when people don't like people, it's because they have an inferiority complex. And they're worried and they want to strike out early. You're going to think bad of me or whatever else. And, you know, I always laugh when I had Ed, Tanya, and Dale all in here together. The first time they all met, they just hated each other. You know why? Because they all recognized each other for what they were. All right. And, you know, and at the time, all three of them were bottom dwellers. They just had an attitude and everything else, and they instantly seized on each other and hated each other and such, and I'm glad two of them got over it.
Right. That's right, yes, sir. Thank the Lord for it.
Oh, it's better than none.
Now, going back to this again, we'll go back to 27. But I say unto you which hear, love your enemies, do good to them that hate you, bless them that curse you. The Apostle Paul will say, for your enemies, do acts of kindness to them. In doing so, you heap coals of fire upon their head. It's the last thing on earth that somebody who despises you and talk bad wants is for you to do a nice thing for them. It drives them absolutely crazy. And it's a lot of fun. You want to have a fun war? Find somebody that despises you and do something wonderful for that person. And, you know, Bill Randall's son, Billy, I preached with a lot. He always tells that story, having a kid that he used to beat up all the time and such and pick on. And Billy got himself into some rough drug problems. At the time, the Hess gas stations in Columbia, South Carolina were owned by a pretty rich woman out of New Jersey. She sent her daughter to manage them, and her daughter was the biggest drug pusher in the area. So now all the guys working the Hess gas stations are all the ones passing the drugs and everything else. Billy gets in with that crowd, and it'd be one of those things, you might have a roll $800-$900 on. You know, it's a gas station at night in a city and such. And and then the guy not show up for the next shift, so you work two shifts in a row or something. And he says one of these times, he'd been there for a couple days, been high on drugs the whole time, and all of a sudden he wakes up. He has no idea when it was, but he just collapsed. And he woke up, and the first thing he did is he felt for his wad of money, and it's gone. And somewhere 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and he looks, and there's that kid that he had beat up so many times, taking care of the pumps, had the wad of money, had seen Billy there, dragged him into the office, laid him there, and took care of those cars and held that wad of money and such until Billy could wake up again. He didn't want to see him go to jail or anything, and then hand it to him. Billy just said, "You talk about stabbing your heart. Here's the kid you've done all this evil to and done everything you can to make his life miserable. And he finds you in that condition, instead of calling the cops or whatever, stands there and helps you, takes care of it, saw to it that not one single dime was stolen." So, and very effective, because they Billy ended up getting saved later.
Well, it takes but one person.
So 28, bless them that curse you. And, you know, it just doesn't hurt to turn around instead of, "Oh, look what they said to me." So what? You know, one of the things you have to get through kids' heads all, "Well, they said this to me." Who's that? Okay. What if they called you a skyscraper? Are you a skyscraper? No, they're an idiot for calling you a skyscraper. You know, that's all, you know, just don't react to that. Just let it go. All right, be done with it. Put a blessing on them. And then it says, pray for them that despitefully use you. And that's hard to do, but you know, you got, and everybody, chances are every single person here in the next 2-3 years will have an incident where somebody you trusted pulls a stunt. And it'll make you mad. And it's something that if you told people, it'd make them mad. But instead of going around telling people about the stunt they pulled and what they did, do you go somewhere and pray for that person? Okay. And a lot of times, the person who despitefully used you has justified it in their own mind. They've convinced themselves that it was really okay to do it. You know, and for one reason, and they're lying through their teeth. But there's, you know, if you hate them, it isn't going to change a thing. You know, I heard a Catholic priest say this, and to be honest with you, I like his attitude. My sister asked him, she said, "What if you found out in confession that a man was stealing from you?" Okay, you know, because priests aren't allowed to say anything. He said, "Well," he said, "I wouldn't do anything." He said, "But I'd be more careful where I left my money." You know, and I thought that makes good sense, you know. And, you know, but it's just, it's one of those things. You have somebody that despitefully uses you, I'll take the first one on the chin.
That's right.
Yeah, I'll take the first one there. And I've had people that it never happened again, and I'm glad I did that. I don't even think they understood at the time really what they'd done or whatever else. Just take it on the chin, and, you know, it passes away. And but, you know, be a little more careful around that person. Don't give them that opportunity. Might be a weakness. You give them that opportunity, they're going to take it. So don't give them that opportunity. Just don't make a huge thing out of it. Then 29, "And unto him that smiteth thee on the one cheek, also offer the other." The little famous thing with the cowboy, only got one cheek, you know. Yeah. "Take away thy cloak, forbid not to take thy coat also. Give to every man that asketh of thee." Now, the other thing is, keep in mind, a lot of people have pointed this out, and I think it's pretty accurate to understand. You're dealing with Jews, with Roman soldiers, publicans, and things, and no chance to fight back against any of this. One of the things a Roman soldier is allowed to do at any time is walk up to a civilian and force him to carry everything for 1 mile. That is a right a Roman soldier had. So you could be going somewhere and all of a sudden, "We want you to carry," and they just don't even say a word. He can, for 1 Roman mile, he can force and he can get another civilian to carry it for 1 Roman mile. And so Jesus Christ says, carry it too. You know, show him that, you know, that you're more than this just person obeying the law. Take it, that extra thing. And you know, have that attitude where people can't bust you, can't burn you, and can't do anything of that sort to you. So give to every man that asketh thee, and him that taketh away thy goods, ask them not again. And that's a hard thing to do. And as you would that men would do unto you, do also to them likewise. And that's the golden rule. How do you want to be treated? Treat everybody that way.
As far as
the, yep, go ahead.
As far as the point you're making, where do you draw the line of, okay, take it all, linen, and you've commonly said a few times in the past, should America not done anything about Pearl Harbor? Yeah, we could be ashamed of it. So I'm kind of curious, where do you draw the line between what you're speaking of now and that one?
You know what the Apostle Paul said? Randy has a good question.
That's good.
Apostle Paul said, as much as lieth in you, dwell peaceably with all men. Okay? Everybody here has a different measure. How much can you take? Nobody wants to be a milksop. Nobody wants to be somebody that everybody just walks over. You're not doing anybody any good if you're just somebody that everybody walks over. But if you're somebody who has a chip on your shoulder, you're not doing anybody any good anyway. There is a balance in there. And you are better off to have your balance more towards being used than more towards being never used. Okay? If you think about the people in your life who are guarding, no one's ever going to use me or whatever, they're not pleasant to be around. Okay? But people who get taken to the cleaner all the time just turn out to be whiny crybabies. So, you know, it's that thing, find that balance, hold that balance. If you get taken by somebody, make it a conscious choice, they're taking me, I'm going to allow it. You know, I have this thing, you know, people, a lot of times when somebody new comes into the church, and I'm not talking about some of the people from fine families. I'm talking about people who aren't necessarily fine families. And they'll come up to me, Pastor, I've got to go to the hospital tomorrow. I just don't have any gas money or whatever else. You know, the first time I just stick the money in there. I don't say a single thing about it. You know, I don't even want to look. I don't even want to hear if they went to the hospital or not. They keep coming at me. I get into a thing where I do more verification. Mm-hmm. I remember with Melanie, I made her take things to her doctor. And she'd signed them that said he could talk to me. She signed them for social workers. They could talk to me and such. Why? Because she was coming back asking for a lot. And you know, it turned out was all legitimate. It all really was, to everyone's honor, that we went to that extra length. I even went and I begged money off of Tom Botens. He gave me $1,000 for her to get out of trouble. And you know, she got her driver's license back, got out of probation, got her nursing license back, that had been taken, all these things got done. She's got her children today. You know, one of the hard things is there was a woman, and John and Sharon know her by the name of Nicole, who's one of the most gentle, a pretty girl. She takes foster children, and she was going to take Melanie's little girl, Andrea, and she was going to adopt her if Wyoming County nullified those parental rights. I ended up fighting for Melanie, and Melanie wrote a letter that actually changed their mind in Wyoming County and said, look, you're not understanding this girl. She's never been treated. She's been a subject of sexual abuse all her life. She's an adult survivor, never had this help. And such, and that actually, I was there when the prosecutor walked up to her with a thick piece, a wad of papers like this. And he said, we're going in before the judge, and you see the women here? They're losing their children, just like, Melissa just did. And they're losing them, and they will never get them back. When the judge bangs the gavel, it's over, it's done. These are not their children anymore. He said, your name is in there. And when the judge bangs the gavel over you, I'm standing up to the judge and asking him to suspend that judgment for 1 year. Wow. And if in that year you get a parking ticket, I'm putting that in. Okay? I don't care what it is. You've got to live absolutely lily clean for 1 year. And she did. But then I had to ask myself, here's this woman, Nicole, who's this ideal? Do I really want Andrea with this ex-addict still having a lot of struggles, or with this woman living this perfectly clean life? You know what? Today, Melanie's living a good life. Nicole's husband's been arrested for child abuse and pornography. Wow. Child pornography. Wow. All right? So, you know, it's one of those things. God showed me, no, go for Melanie. All right? Wow. And, you know, that's why when she was in church here a month or two ago, you know, you just the triumph for me that, you know, she's living way over there in Warsaw now and such, but looking at that and seeing what God did and such.
It was hard to watch the whole thing because Andrea had gotten attached to Nicole, and you wonder, you know, is it the right thing? And it just was so different.
That was wasn't that hard to decide? You stand there and say, we're fighting for the mother, and you want to go for that, but you're looking at this other home she could live in. Mm-hmm. You know, and as it turned out, the other home was the hell holes, mm-hmm. and Andrea is thriving with her mother.
Wow.
Okay,
so.
One of those things. And God bless Tom Botens, who when I sent him a letter on that, just sent me $1,000.
Yeah, amen.
Yeah. And it never has. Wasn't alone. Just boom. Yeah. All right. He goes on and he says this, verse 32. For if ye love them which love you, what thank have ye? For sinners also love those that love them. And so it's just, it's easy to love people that love you. It's hard to love people who don't. But those are the ones you ought to love. If ye do good to them which do good to you, what thank have ye? For sinners also do even the same. Well, they've never done me any good. I'm not doing them any good. Well, why don't you start it? Okay. You know, if I, for every 100 people I know that I try to treat kindly and really like them, there's usually one in there that's just a jerk, that's unlikable, and goes out of their way to be unlikable. I've never been able to change that person. Usually it's a very sad life. Mm-hmm. They're that way to everybody. You know, once in a while when I'm working at Radio Shack, there'll be one of the new, you know, young people working there, and some customer will come in and bite their head off. Unreasonable. Say awful things to them. Then they'll make a mistake, and they humiliate them over the mistake they made, and they'll leave. And I just turn around and say, don't worry about that. They treat everyone in their life that way. You know them? No, I just know people. That's a person that every single person in their life, they treat exactly like that. And don't you even take it personal. That's just the way they are. And then you have the next customer come in. You've made a mistake. It's